This is side two of tape 411, October the 19th, 1979, and it's May Brussel in Carmel, California. The Vatican played a very big role in Europe and in the United States at the time of the Spanish Civil War, starting in 1936, where Adolf Hitler and Mussolini were testing their muscles. And one reason they did is that there are so many Catholics in the United States that would have maybe objected to that kind of a war going on over there, or what was happening, or Catholics around the world. And one of the first things that Hitler and Mussolini did was to make a pact and give a large amount of money to the Vatican after World War I, as a matter of fact, to stay in quotes neutral as they armed for World War II. And I'm going to keep updating our Pope because I believe he's the most political Pope that has ever been used, because he's the media Pope, the Polish Pope with the media and the actor training. So always when he stands against the blue sky with the white coats waving, or he has his little red pointy patent leather shoes and he gets down and kisses the ground and lifts the babies in the air and so forth, always remember he's the media Pope and watch what he does. So I want to update some stories on the Vatican for the tape as often as they come along, just as I update the murders, to watch the role of the use of the combined Christian religion to wipe out a good section of mankind and starve them out and kill them. Last week, of course, is Michele Sindona, that I made tapes about, appeared. He appeared because the Pope had gone home. Everything that has happened to him is a secret. The FBI and the New York detectives are not allowed to say where he was. The warrant for his arrest when he left town is sealed. It remains sealed as of the time that I'm making this tape. And the banking advisor to the Vatican has now reappeared. The Pope came home and obviously settled matters, because his chief of protocol, as I mentioned before, his bodyguard, his head banker, and the advance man, all in one, came to this country. And after that, Sindona surfaced. He's been out on $3 million bond, and he's wanted in this country and in Europe for taking millions and millions of dollars. He was one of the wealthiest men in Italy and illegally moved $225 million from a bank in Milan that he controlled, and had at least $40 million, they say up to $80 million, of the Vatican money that he was dealing that is gone. Now, it's funny, the Vatican can own the $2 billion worth of property around the world entirely, own the Watergate Hotel and buildings on the Champs-Élysées and real estate all over the world. And the Pope came to America, and there are just a few articles out of the many that were published. One in the Washington Post, "The Parable of the Rich Man, a Solemn Rebuke to the Selfish," and then a big, it's by Hens Johnson, a big square that says, "When he speaks critically of the rich and permissive society, there's no doubt that he's speaking of America, the center of the capitalist world and the consumer society. It was his $90 million that came into American corporations and bought American stock and put money into Chase Manhattan and into Standard Oil and Mobil and all these various corporations." And he gets up on a pulpit that we'll talk about and talks about materialism. Another article, "Harlem Catholics Hail the Pope's Admonition to the Rich." Now, get out Mein Kampf. If you don't own it, buy a paperback, go to the library, and write what Adolf Hitler said about the rich and the poor. Adolf Hitler was put in by Standard Oil and DuPont and Henry Ford and American and British corporations and chemical corporations. And his speeches were against Wall Street, against the rich, help the poor, help the women and children. Again, all those little children that the Pope is kissing. And he goes to Harlem. Here, the bank that Sindona was associated with was a bank that has been uncovered to be with organized crime and narcotics dealing. The narcotics ends up in Harlem. What keeps them poor is the drugs that they're on, and drug money goes through the banks that the Vatican has investment in. So dig that circle and understand, when he goes to Harlem, he's just looking at the doped out people that the drug money has sent. And you didn't hear him give any speech against organized crime or stealing or his being ripped off in America of $40 or $90 million that could go to the poor. Time Magazine, loose publication, "John Paul Superstar." That's just what he is, a special album of his journey. Like Jesus Christ the Superstar, they want to make a comparison because of that famous play and musical, Jesus Christ Superstar. John Paul is no Jesus Christ. If he were, he'd take off all those trimmings that he's got and all the millions. Jesus would never spend a cent on this kind of attire or this superficiality. They all take what Jesus had and did and can't live like Jesus lived for one day. And because they lived that day, they strung him up and made a lesson for everybody else who tried to live like him and poked his belly with a sword and then began to accumulate the riches and the gold and to steal the prayers from the Jewish Psalms of David that are read in every Christian church and the Jewish Bible, the Old Testament, the story of creation, and the various prayers that were taken by the Christian church based upon Jewish prayers, a Jewish boy named Jesus that they strung up, and then he goes around John Paul superstar. Another big article in the New York Times, Pope John Paul, with you we will, by the grace of God, restore morality. Where is morality? Embracing a mission of global moral authority. That's just some of the ripoff. If you read the papers, you know the crap that was coming out. If you don't get the Eastern papers, go to the library and puke. Another article, editorial by Richard Eder. The Pope is a humanist. From unusual background, John Paul acquired the intellectual tools with which to hold his own. Now, that's true. With his background, he did develop the tools to hold his own. The question is, can you hold your own against him? Another article, six cities visited by the Pope estimate they spent $7 million. Not counting the cost of what the Catholic Church spent, New York City spent $3 million. If he was loved so much, you didn't need that many police. Or, you know, there were bodyguards around to keep people from killing him, actually, but there isn't much about that. In Philadelphia, they built a platform that cost $75,000. Was led by Mayor Frank L. Rizzo, 26 feet high, 144 feet across. Why didn't he just go to a Catholic church and say prayers on the soil of America? $75,000 for that, and the Civil Liberties has a lawsuit against the altar that cost $196,000. And that was just for the material. That wasn't for the building. In Chicago, where they're broke, and Jane Byrne, is trying to cut the budget from all kinds of activities, they spent over $1 million, $1.5 million for the Pope in Washington, D.C. In Boston, it was between $450,000. And these pulpits, the altar in Washington, D.C., the altar alone and the backdrop was $400,000. Now, if he isn't a media pope, what do you need a backdrop that costs $400,000? I mean, I could have given them one of my sheets if they want that you get at a garage sale for 50 cents. I don't know why, and certainly Jesus Christ Superstar didn't have a $400,000 altar. Chicago spent $600,000 just to get out mass books to say with the Pope. And then he admonishes the materialism and sits on a stool over there at Madison Square Garden and grunts. If you heard the youthful people singing to him, and he is, should I imitate him, going, every grunt's a dollar. That's what it was on television if you saw him. Another article in the Washington Post, not an article, a letter to the editor, September 30th, 1979, time for the Vatican to recognize Israel. It says, how far can they go? It's about the moral imperative of recognizing the state of Israel, the establishment of diplomatic relations with the Jewish state, that the Jewish state has been there since 1948, and as Rabbi Rosenzweig writes, that the Israel is backed in, the Third World is ganging up against them, that they've been a bulwark there, and there's now this pressures of oil politics and communist ideologies, and Israel's being squeezed out, and the Vatican has never represented or recognized that Israel is a country yet and will not establish foreign diplomatic relations between the Vatican and the Jewish state because it denies the existence of the Jewish state. Another series of articles about Polish spies now. IG Farben, Polish Pope, and we'll go into that in a little bit, is now being embroiled in stories of Polish spies. He has so much visibility going in and out of Poland, and then this money that's for the church can be used to foment the revolution, like the Hungarian Revolution against the communists, to break loose from the communists. One article this last week from the Los Angeles Times, Poland is delaying the passport for a journalist that the priest, a priest invited by the Pope. The Pope asked a journalist from Radio Free Europe with headquarters in Munich, Germany, who to go on his plane, personal plane, while he took this trip around the United States. And Poland claims that that priest belongs to the Central Intelligence Agency and that the presence of the correspondent of Radio Free Europe on this Pope's trip was offensive to them, and they interpreted it as being American-sponsored with links to the intelligence community. Now they're holding up the passport of another priest journalist who was invited to travel with the Pope and the staff of the Vatican, Adam Boniecki, Reverend Adam Boniecki, and they're claiming that America betrayed them, and the Pope did by taking a man from Munich, Germany, who'd been doing propaganda against the government for years on Radio Free Europe. Another woman, a Polish aide from the United Nations, who wasn't sent by the government of Poland, who's been linked from a foreign country, has been arrested. She was traveling through Poland, and she's been arrested as being a danger to the security of Poland. And she was working in the United States and getting her PhD. She was a student. She went through Poland to see her parents, and they kept her there. And the United Nations is claiming that you can't hold somebody back when they're traveling through like that. And Poland is saying when you have a spy, the United Nations conditions for somebody traveling through are different, and they're holding this woman there. Another article about the FBI working with the Polish government in 1972, and that's the time when those priests in Philadelphia were in trouble and went to Poland when Carol was still over there and wasn't the Pope, went with their problems of financial embezzlement and so forth. They were beginning to siphon $22 million out of the Philadelphia area. In 1972, just at that time, the FBI was working with Polish agents, and in order to get certain Polish citizens to the United States, the FBI turned over detailed information about 8 lawyers in Chicago area in order to blackmail them, to blackmail the Polish officials to release people who later could be part of the Cold War against Poland. And they turned over, the FBI turned information about these attorney secretaries and their mistresses, the girlfriends, where they take vacations, their drinking habits, their family members. And all of this, they were wiretapped, their lines were wiretapped, these attorneys. One of them, just as a fluke, sent to the Freedom of Information for some facts about himself. His name is Melvin Stein of Chicago. And then found out that the FBI had all this information in Poland. And he is suing William Webster, the director of the FBI, and the former Attorney General Griffin Bell, because they still have locked up these documents and won't release them. And they have them in vaults in the Dirksen Federal Building, the information about these lawyers. But in order to get these people over here from Poland, and they weren't allowed on a legitimate basis, they got these lawyers blackmailed, and that is the name of the game I always say in this country, bullets and blackmail will get them what they want, and that's what they use. There's an article in the LA Times last week about Cardinal Cody, a man of controversy in Chicago, and of course this Pope had to make amends in all those cities as he traveled. Cardinal Cody was in charge of parochial schools in the Chicago area and decided to close schools that catered to the blacks. Some of them are non-Catholic, middle-class blacks who wanted to go to private schools. There are private schools in our area that are Catholic schools that non-Catholics can attend. But he closed the ones where the blacks were going, and he's been very controversial, and they've been trying to get him out of that Chicago area. It's been impossible for the other popes to do it, and now there's a suggestion that he may be transferred to a Vatican post. But you can see why this guy had to cover some of these bases with these $90 million and controversies going on in these various cities. That Paul Marcinkus, the bodyguard, advance man, and head of the Vatican money, the bag man that travels next to the Pope, is from Chicago, Illinois, and that's his home base. And I mentioned before that LA Times article that Vatican watchers predicted Marcinkus would be eased out when after the Sedona scandal, because he was linked to the bankruptcy and the Vatican money up to $80 million, this article said. The various articles go from 45 to 90 million of Vatican money that's missing. And the LA Times article said that after Pope Paul VI, the death, they thought that this Chicagoan would disappear from the papal sanctum, the inner sanctum. But when John Paul II came in, he was more thoroughly entrenched than ever. In Vatican City last week, Pope Paul II, for all of his greasy speaking. Do I say I'm angry at him? I guess I am. I'm angry at that media hype and the murder of John Paul I and all that's taking place. An article that a very liberal cardinal offered his resignation, which they have to do at age 75, but John Paul II has been taking back men older than 75 years old. It's a formality, like when members of our cabinet turn in their resignations at the change of administrations. At age 75, they turn it in. And the Belgian cardinal, Swinen, his name is Leo Joseph Swinen, turned in his resignation, and John Paul II accepted it. This was the most liberal member of the Vatican, and he was the one who would want to change the Curia, which is the centralization of power in Italy, in the Vatican, and Pope John Paul II. Speaking of materialism and America giving up their money and all the, as I say, the media hype, when the most liberal member of the Vatican turned in automatically his resignation, John Paul II jumped on it. There's another article about the Vatican second-in-command, Cardinal Casseroli. That was in last week's Washington Post. Some people are eking out a little bit of truth. This is by Megan Rosenfeld. And this article says, when John Paul II visited the White House with the entourage, the second most important man was his Secretary of State from the Vatican, Agostino Casseroli. It goes on to say that he's a skilled diplomat with the Vatican hierarchy. He's steady and he's methodical, and it tells how he skillfully worked his way up to becoming the Secretary of the Vatican. And his relationships began with Reverend Carl Wojtyla, that's the current pope, in his elevation to cardinal in 1967. It's when this particular person, Casseroli, took note of Carol, he went to Poland in 1967, and when he saw Carol Wojtyla, the next year he negotiated with the government there, and that's when Carol Wojtyla moved up in his career in 1967. Now, the second man of the Vatican, this Casseroli, was born in Milan in 1914. There is a group around Pope Paul VI, who was Secretary of the Vatican, writing those passports for the Nazis, called the Milan Mafia. When he became the pope, and I've done this on other tapes, he brought back to Italy what they called the Milan Mafia. The second in command to the Vatican is a member of that Milan Mafia, born in Milan, ordained in 37, who did go to Poland and visited Pope Karol Wojtyla and elevated him to cardinal the year after the visit in Poland. This man was planned for a long, long time, this Pope Paul, John Paul II. Another article from a magazine called Ligurian on the rise of John Paul II, and it's about a man who went to Italy, studied with him. He's one of the five Americans from St. Petersburg, Florida, who went to visit when he was ordained the Pope, who went to school with him and is active in the Vatican politics with the Pope. I also did a mention a few weeks ago about the lawyer from the Florida area. His law office was used to write illegal passports and aliases for people, and he was Jimmy Carter's ambassador there in the Vatican until he was brought home because of that other scandal. This Father Larkin from Florida said he met Father Carol Wojtyla in 1948. 1945, when the war was over, in 1947, the National Security Council was formed and the Central Intelligence Agency. And 1948 was a very important year, and that's when Larkin met Wojtyla, and they were graduate students at the university in Rome. And then Wojtyla went on to be a bishop to a cardinal in 9 years. This article says he rose through the ranks from bishop to cardinal in a very fast pace from 1958 to 1967. And in 1967 is when that member of the Vatican entourage, who was a diplomat who worked his way up through the ranks, another article on how he promoted himself to the ranks. He went to Poland and picked this man. I think it's interesting that Joan Baez, who recently has been accused of being in the CIA, posters of her working with the CIA, she's doing good work in helping those refugees, and I think it's great. And she's going to Rome to speak to the Pope about those particular refugees, the deaths that are taking place in Indochina and Cambodia. But she feels that if she goes right from Southeast Asia to see the Pope, that he will help her. I think it's great that she's doing that. I also think it would be nice if she took care of the what's happening to the same poor people that are being tortured and starved off in Peru, Uruguay, Paraguay, took note of Jonestown and Guyana, Argentina, Chile, Guatemala, and Costa Rica. There are many deaths happening and many tortures taking place in all Catholic countries. These are all Catholic. Indonesia and Cambodia isn't all Catholic under the domain of the Pope. But where they're almost 90% Catholic population is where these murders and assassination teams and Nazis are harbored. And I would always have liked to seen Joan Baez take the issue to the Pope about those situations, and I've taken issue with her many times in the past years. One of my subscribers to the tapes sent me a book that came out after the visit of the Pope, Pope John Paul II, and also sent me a button. I asked them to send me a button. I have a button collection, and I got a button from the Pope in New York City. If any of you pick up other buttons or see political buttons in your hometown for various movements and so forth, I do have a vast button collection. But I got this book last week on Pope John Paul II, and I just want to mention a few pages in it. You can buy it or get it at the library. But from page 47 to 59, it goes into the background of this particular pope in the rock quarry at Solvay plant. And that's the plant that I said was Auschwitz, owned by I.G. Farben. And those of you who don't have the background on the Pope will have to get my back tapes on it. The book tells about, in 1940, how Carol Wotula, I don't know if I pronounced his name right, worked in the underground theater, Rhapsody Theater, as an actor, co-producer. Hitler invaded Poland in 1939, and there was very little theater of any kind. And what he calls the Rhapsody Theater, the underground group, could as much been an underground with the German side as against the Russians in this war, because many of the Poles, in fact, most of them, went welcomely. Germany was welcomed as soon as they entered. There was no problem with the Germans taking over Poland. The book says he played many roles in the productions during the Nazi occupation. And it talks about conspiratorial classes and clandestine theater performances, but that could be used by the Nazis against the Russians later, which he's doing now. And it tells about a superficial listing of helping Jews, but all the Jews were wiped out there except a handful, and I don't know that his name was legend among the Jewish community. The important thing was that he was interested in theater, cinema, and sports. And then it goes on to say that his work at the rock quarry at Solvay plant, where he was sent to work each day, made him see the Jewish plight, and it might have been a determining factor in his becoming a priest. And it tells how he was working at the rock quarry at Solvay Chemical Company. Now, Solvay comes into this book, and they refer to it on several pages. On page 41, it says, during the war, he went to work. It tells about the Gestapo, as I say, coming in. And then he went to work in a rock quarry. He found a job at the Solvay Chemical Works near Krakow. He secured this job at Solvay, and they needed stones as raw material. And without much time, he got to know the foreman, and he was promoted. He didn't do the rock work much, but he was a shot firer, and they used explosives and bore into the rock and strung up fuses. And those caves and mines hid airplanes and material of the Nazis during the war. It tells about his early promotion and that he stayed in a heated hut with bosses while other men were out there in the rock quarry. And the job in the quarry was over in the daytime. In the evenings, he was studying in secret. On page 44, it tells about the Solvay factory and that he did get a new job as a purified boiler water, and he carried buckets of water and so forth. The book says, while working in Solvay, he became actively involved in efforts to improve the working conditions in the factory and to provide for workers' religious and cultural needs, as well as creating recreational facilities for them in the rock quarry. Well, Auschwitz had its string quartets, its cultural facilities, and religious facilities for Christians, not for all religions, and he was working under the Nazis. When you get to a book called Treason's Peace, and I think I've had that on a book list for you before, it's about German dies and American dupes by Mr. Armbruster. On page 340 and 347, it talks about I.G. Farben And they were named as co-conspirators with Solvay Process, owned by Allied Chemical and Dye Company. It's Belgian named Solvay and AC, and the German-owned American Potash and Chemical Company. Pope John Paul II worked in Poland for Solvay Company, that was also Allied Chemical and Dye Company, that was linked to IG Farben. And as a matter of fact, when they were charged with conspiracy, when Farben was charged with conspiracy after the war, in various legal matters, their advisor was John Foster Dulles of the firm of Sullivan and Cromwell. And Alan Dulles, who was the head of the OSS and the CIA, was the brother John Foster Dulles. And this Dulles was a director and a partner to the company of I.G. Farben. And that's who this book wrote about, the law case where Mr. Dulles interceded for I.G. Farben and the Justice Department, one of his companies. And it says it's rather possible that someone inside the government may have believed it was poor taste publicly to hold up to scorn a company like IG Farben, of which Mr. Dulles was a director of IG Farben and also a partner. And IG Farben and Solvay Chemical and Allied Chemical were partners. But you don't get that in one book. You get in two or three. First, we start with the Pope working at Solvay. The book, Treason's Peace, The Link of the Dulles Brothers to Solvay and IG Farben. Then another book, I.G. Farben, Questions and Answers, that was written, this book was written in 1947. And I think I've given you, again, I'll give the bibliography on this. It's about Hitler and big business and the army, and it goes into I.G. Farben and page 129 about Hermann Göring Work, the head of I.G. Farben, and Göring Work took over, seized the Belgium company, the Solvay company, and I.G. then cooperated with that Göring Works company, made a complete control of the Belgian Solvay Chemical Company. So what you have is IG Farben up to a certain year in 1932 being separate, then taking over the Solvay Chemical Company that this Pope worked for when he was studying acting and drama. So out of a series of three books, you get part of the story. Another good book by Anthony Sutton, The Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler. There's a whole chapter on the empire of IG Farben and how it built up. And that was the company that made the gas that exterminated the people in all the concentration camps that were located in Poland. And the use of Paul Warburg, the Bank of Manhattan, and Henry Ford, a Ford Motor Company, and so forth, being behind IG Farben. So also this book on the empire of I.G. Farben goes into Prince Bernhard. I think a long time ago when the Pope first came in, we talked about the politics of this. One of the most prominent of the Farben intelligence workers was Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, who joined Farben in the early 1930s after the completion of 18 months with Hitler's black-uniformed SS, the Gestapo. It's Mr. Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, who forms the Bilderberger. He formed that secret society. Brzezinski is the daddy or the organizer of the international arm and represents this group. And that's how they selected this Polish Pope, through the Bilderbergers, the Council of Foreign Relations, and particularly that Bernhard group that really runs our State Department through men like Kissinger and Bernhard. They had knowledge of this Pope from the days he was promoted from knocking a few rocks to setting up the culture and religious services over in this company. And if he was in fact considered of a handful of Jews that lived in Poland after the war, the 600 Jews or so, which this book says that he had some sympathy for the Jews and worked in the underground, why can't this Pope then recognize Israel as a homeland for those Jews that he saw killed? Because his country in Poland was the home base for all of the concentration camps that came out of Poland. And this man is in his politics between the Catholic Church in Chicago and their corruption and racism, the Catholic Church in Philadelphia and their ripoffs, the Catholic Church in Washington with Watergate bugging and breaking a president to get a succession of people that could finally pick a Polish Pope, the one they wanted. They got Nixon, Agnew out, and Rockefeller killed, and they can successfully handpicked through blackmail and murder any president that doesn't go along. And Jimmy Carter certainly has been the president that welcomed the Polish Pope after the one was killed. Before he came to this country, his wife Rosalind and Amy were photographed in the Vatican. And this religious, devoutly Christian man welcomes the Polish Pope to try to make the entire world Christian, which is what Jimmy Carter wants also. For some of you, this goes too fast because you're not filled in on the fat back details. I keep apologizing for that, but I just have to keep it at this speed. Our time is out. I'll be with you next week. This is Mae Brussel and Carmel, and you take care.